Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My name is Nate Benn from Brighton, and you're listening to the Dane Baptiste Questions Everything podcast. My question is, would you rather have no upper lip or no nose? Surgery is not an option. Okay, here comes the show, and remember to question everything.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast for myself, comedian, writer, and occasional actor Dane Baptiste, my producer friend Howard Cohen, a.k.a. The Hizzer.
Hello.
And a mix of very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked, and we are talking everything from...
We are talking everything from Nate Benn from Brighton's question, would you rather have no upper lip or no nose? Nate, what's going on, mate? You all right? That's quite the question.
I'm not sure. That sounds like referring to the procedure of maybe removing a cleft palate. I'm not going to go too deeply into it, but I think I would rather have no upper lip. I feel like the installation of an upper lip is a lot... I could get cosmetic surgery for a lip. I feel like getting a nose and then attaching that to the rest of your sinus cavity and is a bit harder. Because the thing is, even if I haven't got a top lip, I still got a tongue and a nose, so I can smell and eat good food. Whereas,
correct,
without a top lip, I mean, maybe I can't kiss the chef because the food's good, but I can still eat the food.
And exactly.
And we both know there's a lot of people in this world who don't have top lips, Howard, and they live normal-ish lives.
Ish. Well, it's a pretty weird question, Nate, but well done, mate. You made it onto the show, and we ask all the questions, Dane, as that has just proved.
Really. Exactly, all the questions. And if you have questions for the show, please send in to the show. And if you enjoy the show, please rate and review on iTunes. You can also catch the show on Spotify, where you can follow us, and you can also find us on Acast, the world's largest podcast network. So don't miss it there either.
That would be because a tongue can do a lot of things.
You need your tongue for taste. And speaking of tongue, as you guys can hear, it's my pleasure to introduce today's very special guest. They are a beloved comedian, radio presenter, and TV personality who we all know is destined for stardom because of their natural warmth. Many listeners recognize her and from her many TV appearances on Loose Women. She's also gone on to appear in shows such as Celebrity MasterChef and The Stand-Up Sketch Show. She regularly smashes Instagram and social media with a variety of content full of opinion, advice, laughter, and mainly love, which makes her so special. And she is the personification of nominative determinism. She is all about the love, so please welcome to the show the one and only Ms. Judy Love.
That was such an intro. I was like, who the hell is he talking about? Is that me?
That's definitely like, you. We like to elevate on this podcast. We like to elevate. There's no question about the quality of guests.
You need to be my host every time I walk on that stage, because with that kind of, I'm gonna be like, you know what? You need to triple pay this ass. Did you just hear what he said?
This is it. That's the Hizzer. That's the producer there.
Deserved. It's a joy. You know, it's one of the things that you really produce in this show, Judy. You kind of actually learn to love, which is, look at this lovely person that's coming on here, and you do emit love and warmth and fun and energy into the universe, doesn't she, Dane? So it's a pleasure to write.
She does, because everyone knows me, Judy. I'm not known for smiling, but I can't help but do it when you're around. That says a lot.
That is such a compliment. I've never seen you with a screw face yet.
This is what I'm saying. Life. I can't do it when you're around, Judy. I can't keep on my screw face. I can't keep resting
bitch face. I've seen that face, by the way, so it does exist, Judy, that's for sure.
But see, Judy gets it all the time. She gets it all the time. Judy, how are you doing, by the way?
You know what? I'm doing good. I'm here with you. Finally got my sofas, because I didn't have no sofas for nearly 2 damn weeks.
Nice.
So I'm sitting here feeling nice with you guys, sunshining a little bit. Kids are eating me out of house and home, but hey, you know what? It could be so much worse. Just did my Monday motivation video. I'm going to take a break of social media, everything for a week. Only a week, people. I ain't going.
People's panicking. They need to live their life.
I'm going to take a week. I like to encourage people to just take that time. I think we need it. There's been so much going on in the last 5-6 months.
Absolutely.
That I think we need to take, whether it's 3 days, 2 days, just to get some peace back in your mind.
Absolutely. Mm. We absolutely agree, Judy. And you know, for those who don't know, Judy, you came in the game like a wrecking ball. Like, how long have you been doing comedy for now?
I've been doing comedy about 6-7 years, I'd say. So it's 2013 or 14. Yeah.
Oh, man. See, that's kind of flown by. And yeah, people don't know, Judy came in naturally warm as the big sister and the young auntie and the lady next door. And, you know.
I love that, Dave.
This is
it. I love that you said young auntie, because I came in a little bit older. And I love that you said, like, I'm bang in the middle. I'm not the same age as the older ones who kind of brought us in. But I'm a little bit older, just a few years, than some of the ones that were there in the game for a little while. So I've come right in the middle. So that young auntie thing, you know, like that auntie that really, if you calculate it, it couldn't really be your auntie.
Yes,
but because they're your mum's sister, because the grandma and granddad had a little thing later on in life.
Yeah, of course. We know. We know Judy's the one that cashed out the christening with a spliff, but she's like, make sure you have some drinks. Make sure you have some water before you go home. Auntie
Judy, where all the nephews and nieces are like, yeah, I want to go and stay at Auntie Judy's yard. Yeah, come back.
Auntie Judy, can I stay with you? My mum's tripping again. And you're like, oh, all right. But, you know, I don't like to get involved in the madness, but...
The first time I ever saw Judy was in Vault Festival at a funny women competition. I would say that evening was a pleasant evening, and there were many people who have talent. And the audience respond nicely because there's a lot of people in there to support people.
Yeah.
But Judy came on and you just demolished it. It was just destruction. And the thing that I think the audience responded to most about you was not being sure when it was your material and when it was just you. I think that's one of the great things about watching Judy live, guys, if you ever get to go and see her live, is I don't think you ever really know if Judy's talking to you as in, I'm just going to talk to you, or if it's material. And obviously, there is masses of material, right?
But it's a material that is real life. So real life stuff I try to talk about, or I try to talk about things that people can relate to. So thank you for that. I didn't win, though, but thank you.
I was a judge, and I must tell you that I walked in and, I was surprised by the by the fact that I wasn't, like, it was just so obvious to me. Because, I mean, Dane, you know when someone kills a room, right?
Absolutely. It's like,
Judy had just annihilated this room.
I think they look for different things. I suppose, like, how many times did I have to perform? I think I performed 3 times. But I suppose they look at different aspects of the performance, how you engage the audience, the setup of the joke, stuff like that, how much people kind of get it. Is it kind of a universal joke? So for me, I just get on the stage and just do me. Like, if you like it, you like it. If you don't, there's going to be bits you will like. And if you don't like any of them, then I'll see you soon, babes. I don't know where else I can give you.
Nobody can impersonate Judy. That's
look how
sure.
Nice and diplomatically that was put. If you don't like it, then I guess I'll see you around. Now, if you didn't like my stuff, I know I'll direct you. It would be to some maternal genitals in your family. But that's another story for another time. But the thing is, Judy, you say you don't win, but long term, you went from funny women to loose women. So now you are leading
and
a platform
what,
where you get to like women all the time.
But the thing is, it's nice to have been a part of it with the funny women, because I suppose, you know, there's many talented women on there, the women that won and the women that took place. And it's nice that we as women in comedy could do something. And yes, I think we all have different areas that we are, you know, in life and where we have purpose, where we're meant to go. So it wasn't for my destiny at that time to win. And I think just being on the lineup for me was a win.
Absolutely.
Get what I mean? Having that kind of exposure experience. And now, yes, I am a panelist on The Loose Women. I'm a loose-ass bitch. I
mean, there you go. Yeah. you can say it. We shan't. Ever.
Dane, it's probably time for a question, as the format dictates.
Absolutely. So again, Judy, can't thank you enough for being a guest on the podcast. As our very esteemed guest, we invite you to ask the first question, any question you would like. There is no question too intelligent. There is no question too stupid. All questions are welcome on the show, which we'll discuss for 15 minutes and some change. And then Howard will ask a question. We will do the same. And then lather, rinse, repeat. I'll ask the final question. We'll discuss. Then we will go. Everybody have a nice time. You get to enjoy them sofas. And you get to go around giving love around the rest of the world. Sound like a plan?
Yeah, sounds like a good plan. My question's, listen, right, I'm just going to keep it real with what I am. Do you men, is it like between you guys when you have your conversation and so on?
I love it already.
Just keep it real. Do you guys secretly have fantasies about having a bit of a fluffy, like having a bit of peace with a fluffy? We want to know the gist, because I get a lot of men that are like, you know, outside, they're like, yeah, nah, you know, they want like a little Kim Kardashian. But then they'll be sending me little DMs, or when they see me, every minute they're squeezing my arm, like they're obsessed with the fatty bits, like the chubby bits. Do you guys secretly fantasize about fluffies?
Well, okay, for anyone may not be aware, what Judy is saying is that despite the narrative from most men about the quintessential attractive female form, are men more secretly attracted to, we'll say, a more fuller figured woman?
Yeah.
Well,
big ting.
Oh, I'm gonna lie, it's no secret. I like big tings. That's
so, it's, so do
it's,
I.
It's not a secret. I feel like I don't know. I can't speak for a lot of men. I feel like a lot of the time when it comes to discussions about beauty and the female form, I think a lot of it is very much skewed and manipulated by media, manipulated by capital interests, and I really feel like. My opinion is beauty, really, as we understand it, is a lie. I feel like, you know, even though it's a very old and hack adage, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. I don't think there's any uniform or universal standard for beauty. And I think even though, for example, Judy, you might refer to your body type as fluffy, I think if you were somewhere like in, you know, Samoa.
Nigeria.
Yeah, Nigeria or Samoa, you know, there are a lot of parts of the world outside of the West and outside of Western Europe where... you know, people would argue that your shape would be a lot more feminine. But then at the same time, I wouldn't like to say by that narrative that a woman that's maybe slimmer or like, you know, a size zero up to like maybe a size eight is also undesirable or less feminine. So for myself personally, I don't have a type.
That's a good answer, Dave. Like, that is such a broad answer, but it's good because I think like the fact that what you're saying about the whole... the thought of beauty and how people try to construct it and how society puts its layers on top of it. It takes away someone actually being acknowledged for their internal beauty. Yeah, there's so much that's put on the external, and I think it just changes the narrative and almost controls it. And that in itself is why there is such labels as plus size and this size. It really makes me think that who decided? I never decided to be plus size.
Exactly.
It was given to me.
Exactly.
Like one day I was 12 and then I was like, you're plus size. I was like, oh, who told you that? My mama, she made dumplings. Like, how am I supposed to say no?
Exactly. Well, I mean, why should you even say no? And like you said, I feel like when guys, the outward narrative men might give about the women they're attracted to, I think that a large part of that comes from suggestion. And I don't think it's really a thing that men secretly like fluffies. I think men like women of all sizes. I think obviously, especially because a full figured woman a lot of time is very indicative, like I said, of femininity. Because if you look at like old archaeological evidence of like fertility gods from the African continent and stuff, the carvings and like, you know, the stone carvings are all very full figured women. And, you know, a lot.
Even when you look at some of the European paintings
exactly.
of women back then, very curvaceous, breasts, thighs. They had belly. They even had a little bit of belly.
Yeah.
So I think on a global level, I think there is, maybe it's more about the Western world and places like America that has really like tried to shut down that narrative and change it of all kind of being accepted and seeing a woman just as a woman and have this wider aspect regards to shape and body type instead of just making it into this one kind of narrative. Maybe it's the UK and the US that needs to catch up really or open up his mind.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the real paradox is that, like, to women of all body types, the suggestion always is whatever they are isn't good enough. And, like I say, the reason why I say beauty is a lie is because I think that's more of an idea that's been commodified so that it can be manipulated for capital gain. So, like, you know, my mother, for example, my mom's almost 5'8", she's like a size zero. And so while some women might be like, oh, well, that's the body you tried to attain, then my mom was like, but when I was growing up, people might call me a beanpole or I might not satisfy, you know, the quintessential figure for a Caribbean woman. So she was dealing with that. And I've got like lots of friends or like girlfriends who might be criticized because of their shape. But then on the other hand, like you're being told that you're fluffy, you're plus size. So it's like, as a woman, you typically can't win. And I remember Tina Fey, who wrote Mean Girls, she said that women are saddled with this ridiculous aspirational figure whereby, you know, you're supposed to look like a Kardashian where you're racially ambiguous. So you're like olive skin, but you're not too dark, you're not too light. But then you also have a size zero waist, but then you've got like D or E cup breasts. Then you're supposed to have like a big bum, but at the same time, you're supposed to have all this full figure and the hormones that couldn't allow that to happen. But then at the same time, you're supposed to be as like a hairless as like an Asian woman, but then have the curves of like a Latin woman and then have the lips of a black woman. So as the more it goes on, the more impossible it is for any woman to attain that. And then, you know, the only people that benefit are cosmetic surgeons. And
you're so right. And I think you're right regards to how, you know, beauty is constructed, because it's a multi-billion million trillion dollar business.
Yeah, you just took the words out of my mouth, Judy, because what I was going to say is just how it would our approach to beauty be as it is now if it wasn't for the money associated with it and the manipulation of people's minds to kind of think that they need to be a certain way, otherwise they have less value in society, which is I mean, if you think about it that simply, it's tragic, because the one thing I definitely see in my world and my life and anyone, I mean, there's just all shapes and sizes, right? That's the best thing about love. Sometimes you'll see two people together, or have you had that situation where you meet a mate of yours and they're like, oh, you're going to meet my new girlfriend and my new boyfriend. You'd be like, oh, great. And then you'll meet them and be like, okay. I didn't see that in my head, right? And that's not a race thing or a background thing. It's just like sometimes you'll be like, okay, yeah. Cool. Like, whatever's working for you, mate, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
The money element is so bad
it's very bad. And I think that's the whole thing behind it, Judy. I think with most men, there's not really this idea that a fluffy woman's unattractive. I think some men, it's suggested to them, and in their head, they develop this idea that the quintessential attractive woman, like I said, is this woman who has these disproportionate dimensions. And, you know, you see that, and you see how that plays out, because, you know, the women, it suggests to them that if they can attain this, then they're happy. But then it's like, I would, not to mansplain, but I'd say to any woman who feels daunted by this idea of being fluffy or husky, it's like, well, then if you look at somebody like, you know, Kim Kardashian, is she happy? Because a happy person doesn't go back under the knife, right? Or, you know, or even, yeah. You see the archetype where, since like the days of Marilyn Monroe, it's been suggested to particularly European women that blondes have more fun. And that,
yes,
that, and that, yeah, to achieve that archetype of having this blonde hair, blue-eyed, Aryan wet dream on big boobs is the epitome of sexual desire or objectification. So a lot of the time when women are trying to express sexuality, that's what they kind of opt for, blonde hair, big boobs and stuff. But then I would say to a lot of women, if you look at the life of like Marilyn Monroe, that ended tragically. And it was her who said, you know, they'll pay you thousands for a kiss and 20 cents for your soul in Hollywood. So she tells you the folly behind it, that's the kind of superficial idolatry, you know, and that repeats again. It's like, you know, look at Anna Nicole Smith.
Again, yes,
Playmate of the Year, Object of Desire, no longer around. You know, I think really for me, it's like women shouldn't even listen to what the fuck any man thinks or what they say they go for, because they're all full of shit anyway. And even when I was in school,
ask that question.
We are full of shit because we're not because men will always say these things, but then definitely will always do the opposite. Because, you know, at one point, I never heard the word cellulite until the 21st century. You know, and all of a sudden that becomes an issue. And then things, and then at one point it was like women were supposed to have like dimples in their bum. Then you're supposed to show a bit of bum cleavage. Then you're not supposed to have cleavage. Then it's supposed to be lifted and separated. And then the idea is that you're supposed to get a breast implant, and then your body's a size 8, but you've got like D cups, which anatomically doesn't make any sense. So then years later,
that's a lot of problems in your back.
There you go. So then years later, women have all these back women have all these back problems, and then then PIP implants, and those weren't proper as well. So I don't know, man. I just think, for me, Judy, I'd say do not listen to what any man says in terms of what his type is or what he goes for, because typically it always ends up being the complete opposite anyway.
And I think you just have to name and shame them. That's all.
Whenever, name and shame them. But the thing is,
I'm not in it. No, but like, you was asking for me to sit on you. Like, stop your noise.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
Jerry, stop your noise.
Exactly.
I'll tell you what the difference is, though.
Exactly.
I'm going to make one difference, because I can talk, you know, about my own personal taste, which if you went through the, you know, the back catalogue, I don't know if that's a good sentence to say about the previous... Tara, just so you know.
I was a player.
Definitely not. Just attempted to play, but failed every time, pretty much. But I wasn't into any fluffy ladies. Like, it wasn't my thing, you know. Yeah. I do remember having one escapade. Do you know what sticks in my mind from it? As much as she was lovely, is that when we, when it came to that time, yeah. She said she had to have the lights off. And that always stuck with me. I assume it may... Now I think back, it might have just been because of me. It might have been because of, she didn't want to look at me. But it might have been that she was self-conscious. And that's kind of... I've never really forgotten that moment. But also, I tell you, the bigger thing for me as well is like... You know, kind of... I don't know. Like, people change, right? That's the other thing. Like, people are allowed to change. Like... You could have a period in your life where that isn't part of, that is part of you, and there's times where it isn't. I don't think people should be, as long as you're healthy and you feel happy, isn't that what matters?
And I think if it's taken to a road like that where, you are becoming uncomfortable yourself because of how, if you've got to that stage and you're still thinking that, you don't want the person to see you, then there's a real disconnect with the love you have for yourself. Because if you feel like that, how do you even judge that this person... It is good enough for you if you don't feel like you're good enough for them to see. I want you to see all of me. Turn on the light, get the LED lights.
Absolutely.
Open the door.
Absolutely. 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 Lights and candles on top of the covers. I don't care. Ain't no shame in my game.
None at all. I want you to see all my bellies. All of them.
There you go.
I'm quite envious of your confidence here, guys. I mean, I've never been confident. I mean, I'm literally like... My wife always jokes. We talked about this, Dane, how I'm like a frightened nudist. Like, I'm not a very nudie person. So when I get changed from bed...
Oh, my God.
Like, really quick. It's a really quick change.
The thing is, as a fluffer, you just got to know how to work it. Like, I know I've got a big chest. I've got belly. I've got thighs. So, if you want to keep that, if any fluffers are listening and you want to know how to manoeuvre, if you're having that little sexy moment with the guy... You've got to know how to prop the arms under the breast without the bra so it still looks perky. There's little things that we know how to do. And I think once you... Sorry, I'm actually doing it before I'm talking to you.
That's why I'm not talking. Please continue.
I've never seen Dane look so serious on this show.
Once you learn all these little manoeuvres, like you have the hand under the breast and, you lie a certain way or you lie on your front so that if you're worried about your belly. Learn all those kind of things and show the personality. Like, I really believe, maybe because I'm a comedian, just address these things from the beginning. Like, if I'm dating someone, I'm very much like, you can see what size I am. So I will be like, I really like this top. Oh my gosh, hold on a minute, I'll call you back. I've got to buy this top. Then when I speak to them, I'm like, I'm so upset. They ran out of size 20. So he knows from the beginning.
But I don't think there should be any surprise. And myself personally, like I said, I can only speak for myself as a man. My advice to most people is like, don't worry about what you want. And even when men talk about what they want, like I said, they're full of shit. And for me, like, my whole endeavor in order to position myself romantically is about working on what I have to offer rather than what I want.
Yes.
And I feel like
I got a lot.
And I think the more you work on that, then by law of attraction, you'll attract the kind of people that you want. So at the end of the day, so that's my position in it. And so for me, big or skinny is all good, ladies. I am happy if I'm able to offer something to somebody who has, a dirty mind but a clean conscience. And close legs to the rest of the world, but an open mind to the whole world. That's my qualities. That's it.
Okay. It's a beautiful question. Love that question.
Thank you.
And listeners of any shapes and sizes, if you want to get in contact and talk about how you're feeling, we'll hook you up. Judy is an incredible speaker to inspire people to appreciate themselves. No, like, that's one of your things online, right, Judy? Like,
Monday motivation every Monday, or try to every Monday, and which is now / hashtag self-care as well, because although it's motivating, there's sometimes when I'll speak about things that is more about self-care. So like today I'm talking about taking a break and finding peace in your mind, and sometimes I might motivate you, like, get up, forget the labels that people's put on you, right. Let's do this. So a lot of that, and other bits that I'm sure we'll talk about later.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was going to talk about my question, and it's kind of goes to both of you guys, you know, and also, you know, interested to hear what our listeners think of this one, which is, you know, online you offer a lot of opinion and a lot of advice on people's issues and life problems, from, you know, really trivial stuff to quite serious stuff. I think it's a fair description, right?
Yeah.
So this is, I'm trying to be quite niche with this question, right? Is there a good way to give advice? Because I tell you what, I've seen some people do a really shit job of it.
Wow. You know what?
You're very good. You're very good, Judy. You're very good. And so it's interesting to ask you, both of you, what you think of that. I don't know where you think stand on it, Judy.
For me, I think it's really, what winds me up, I'll tell you what winds me up first. When people give advice and they haven't even lived that life, live anything near that life, have anybody around them that has been in those kind of situations, I think that it's really important to, as well, not be judgmental. I think sometimes when you've got, like, motivational speakers and stuff, I don't class myself as emotional, I can't even say the word because I'm definitely not here. A motivating speaker.
That's what I say. I won't even pronounce it.
People don't like give you advice. I don't even see it like that. I just talk about things that I've been through, how I feel about it, and what I learned from it. And that's the advice that I give, what I learned, and if it can help, it helps. I think it's really important to, like I said, not be non-judgmental, to understand that someone might make a choice in a certain situation, but that was them then, and maybe that's not them now. Mm-hmm. And when I'm saying non-judgmental, it's the fact that, you know, you never know if you could end up being in the same predicament and making the same so-called bad choices that someone else has. So I always really, I think, you know, you can give bad advice without a doubt. And I think the best way to give advice is to try and see the person as an individual, try and be empathetic to their circumstances, because circumstances, environment really makes a difference mm-hmm. on things that you will do and how you even, you know, see yourself, and then try to give advice that will help them reflect, be honest with their self about their feelings, and have some kind of conclusion of a way out, in the sense of, even if it's them being honest. So you might not be able to say, okay, this is going to get you out, definitely. But if they can actually be honest, you know, God forbid they're with, you know, a partner who's, you know, abusive or something. If they can first, if you can get them the advice that they can be honest with themselves, that they're not happy, mm-hmm. they don't want to be in this, and they feel like they're in danger, that will open up the next mm-hmm. step. What do I have to do now to not be in danger, to try and make myself happy, and to try and get out? I think sometimes when you push people with, like, this is what you must do, this is how you do mm-hmm. it, everybody thinks, works, sings, dance, live, loves differently. Mm. So
the opening bit is the key, right? How you broach giving advice is, like, one of the biggest challenges, I think. Like, I always say to people, do you want to hear my opinion? You know, because I work, if they say, do you know what, no, Howard, I think you talk bollocks about anything to do with love or my relationship, and I don't really want to hear it. I wouldn't, right? I just wouldn't give them the opinion. But I think you kind of try and offer people the chance to say no, really.
Yeah,
I think because some people don't even want your advice yet. They just want someone to listen. They just want to get stuff off their chest.
That's where I go wrong, Judy. You make a good point, because it took me a while to realize sometimes when people would come to me for advice, because a lot of time when people come to advice, like you said, they don't actually want advice. They just want the opportunity to vent. And that took me a while mm-hmm. sometimes, because obviously I try my best to be a goal-oriented or a solution-oriented person. And sometimes, as you said, people aren't ready to hear that necessarily. And also I like to give advice. That's kind of binary in terms of, like, if, for example, when someone says, oh, they might be in an abusive relationship, my thing is, well, fuck that and leave, which is not always as simple as that. And it's not that I'm condemning somebody for their actions or the situation they're in, but I do try and kind of see things in a very black and white kind of way, where I'm like, this person is responsible for your trauma. You need to end that. And it's not always mm-hmm. as simple as that. And the only way I learned that was to be in similar situations. And that definitely helped me gain a lot more empathy. But
But that's because you're an incredibly principled person. It's kind of a very interesting example, you, Dane. You know, I would describe you as one of the most principled people I know. And therefore, you're coming to it with something that often you know, I'm sure Judy's experience is talking to people. Like, not a lot of people have those principles. They haven't been built into them in the way that you have with your upbringing and your life.
Yeah, but you have to practice integrity, and I think that even though I like to think that's a good trait to have, and it's something I definitely try to project. At the same time, I feel like when people see that, like you said, Judy, unfortunately, sometimes people interpret it as me being judgmental. When it's like, I could never be in that situation, and they think, well, is he condemning me for being in that situation? And it's not necessarily the choice. It's just that I just try to set an example for myself because, for the sake of peace of mind, and just, you know, treat others or carry myself in a way I'd like someone to treat or think about when they're dealing with other people. Mm-hmm. But I think for me to have become better at advice, I've definitely needed to learn to be a lot more empathetic and realize not everybody may have had the same opportunity to have the same sense of integrity that I have. Not everyone's had the same opportunities and has the same confidence to be as outspoken about things they don't like as I have. So what I try and do now, instead of try not to give bad advice or appear judgmental, is I always try and seek the ideal state from people. So let's say someone's in a bad relationship or they're in a difficult, or like a love triangle, and, you know, so many entanglements with love. I'll always have to say to somebody, just tell me what you want. Just tell me what you want. And sometimes people think that I'm being aggressive, but I'm just saying, just tell me what you want. Like, I understand we live in a world of compromise and we can live in a world of paradox and duplicity where not everything is straightforward. But at least if someone says to me what the best situation would be for them, we can start working towards the closest semblance of that possible. So someone's like, I feel like I'm trapped and I can't do this. I'll just be like, just what do you want? What would be the best thing? If the best thing, if you're away from this person, you and your kids are safe, living somewhere else, if that's what you want, like, even as unrealistic as it sounds, if that's what you want, let's work towards that.
That's a good way because you in that moment of asking what they want, you can slightly take them out of that trauma for a moment to think clearly, because sometimes that's not what people ask. People will ask you, what's going on? How did you get in this situation? Oh my gosh, I can't believe they did that. What happened? That's usually the first question. It's very rare that someone will say, what do you want? And then they have to stop for that moment and think.
Some people don't even think about it. You know, some people don't even think about it. Like, in relationships, like I said, I've been in relationships with people, and if it goes bad, it's like, yeah, but I thought you was going to be this person, and you always carry. And I'm like, just tell me what you want. Because I always say to people, you have the privilege of conscience. If you know your actions are not to the detriment of another human being or another living person, then you should be able to say or do what you want. If what you're acting or doing is coming from love, like, even if he's like with my friend, sometimes if he wants to say something to me, he's like, I just always get pissed off. I might get pissed off, but you should know, if you're my true friend and you're coming from a place of love, I might be pissed off at first, but I'll get over it, because our relationship and my love for you, whether you are my girlfriend or my wife or my friend, that has to be bigger than my pride.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So my whole thing is, like, it's never about being a creature of pride. I try to practice that the most as possible. It's like, you know, like I said, it's not about me being proud of being black, because that's not something I had any control over. I love being black. You know, my parents, like, the idea is, like, when I become a parent, it's not that I'm proud of my children. I love them for who they are anyway. That's the kind of mentality I want to have in the first place. So when it comes to, like, advice with me, it's always like, I know sometimes it's hard to give advice because, like you said, if you're not in that same position, for you to give people, like, you know, an anecdote on how they can do the same thing. And like I said, people deal with trauma or any situation in very different ways. So that's why my whole thing is, like, when someone vents, I'll listen to them vent and then be like, what is it you want? What is the ideal situation? Yeah. As impossible as it may be.
Like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you brought up race, because that was actually one of the things that kind of made me think about this, because I was... Have you been following this story going on with Adidas in America? and regarding the kind of protests against the lack of diversity in their organization.
Oh, right.
Anyone that works as a designer for Adidas, you know, it's turned out that given it is a hugely black fronted in terms of the sports stars, yeah, particularly in America, organization, most of the people that work there are white. And there's been a few instances. I can share you the links and share it with our listeners if you want to look into it. But the thing that kind of amazed me when I was listening to this story of these protests going on, and you know, arguably the people are being treated really badly, the employees, but is the idea that this HR person is going to give advice to these black employees about how to respond to the racism, or someone put a Confederate flag in a brainstorm document, which is obviously offensive, bottom line offensive, right? But I just thought the process there, and like you kind of look at that and you think, God, there's an example of like, sometimes it's probably best just to not give advice and to try and get some, I don't know. I don't know how they do
that. Well, the thing is, I suppose maybe that person's thinking because they're HR, they understand how to strategically, you know, respond to something. They're thinking of, in that moment of advice, they're thinking about what their skill sets are, not necessarily what the people they're advising needs. And I think that can happen a lot. You know, sometimes you can give advice and you think, oh, because I'm, you know, actually I live quite a good life with my partners and I know this and I know that. And that's exactly probably what that HR person, they're not thinking any
I worked with Kanye and he used the Confederate flag for the bomber jacket from before. And so if Kanye tries to appropriate it, I'm just paying it forward with, and I always think that, again, that comes from a lack of empathy. And to be honest, me personally, you know me, Howard, I am skeptical of anybody who works in a department that refers to human beings as a resource. So I also feel like if you work for a company and I come to you with a grievance about that company, if that company employs you as well, then you have a conflict of interest. And that's why to me, HR stands for hot refreshments. You just talk to them, you drink some tea and they do nothing. Sorry, HR people.
listeners.
If they really wanted to give advice to the people, for the people, their first thing would do is sit down and think what Dane was saying, what do they want? What do my staff want and need? Actually, they need to be able to get off their chest, deal with the how can we give that to them? And then they'd think about finding someone that can, and not saying that people from other backgrounds can't have empathy and have some advice with other stuff, whether it's legal or whatever, but if you was touching on the emotion of it, then they would have thought about getting someone that's relatable.
Well, professionally, they need to try and offer advice in that situation, but the reality of it, I think, is that they need to take advice on how to give the advice out in the first place, because you know this HR person who I believe was a white Caucasian American person was obviously speaking to this employee who'd said, you know, I'm really upset about these couple of scenarios, and it's like, well, you probably can't really understand, can you? You can't really then offer advice. You can try and be empathetic, but as a Jew, I can understand, like, okay, when I see a swastika on someone or I see a swastika tattoo, I can, I can understand some elements, but it's still different. It's still definitely different.
But I think I think you might not be the same cultural background and you might have not been the same age or, but I think if you are able to have that conversation and say, look, okay, you are black, I'm white, I don't see things through the same because of our experience. However, they might have an understanding on how to approach the situation through a company or so on, or have that empathy to say, these are my skill sets. Would that support you in this fight against this injustice? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, that diplomacy is what, and the kind of the detail of it, right, that you're saying, people just love to ignore right nowadays, don't they? They just want to literally just throw, the prams, the toys out the pram is demeaning to the issues. But like, people just want to get fucked off, right? That's the era we're living in, which I can understand. I mean, Dane, listen, we've talked about enough stuff on this podcast that requires us getting angry.
Yep.
But that diplomacy has to exist somewhere, doesn't
it? Yeah, definitely. I, as I said, for me, I already think when it comes to advice or any kind of discourse in terms of empowering other human beings or understanding them, I just think empathy is just the biggest part of it, and also by that merit of empathy, understanding how rationalization works. I always feel like a lot of the time people will say something like, oh, how can poor people, if they're so poor, buy cigarettes and blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, you know what? If I grew up where I didn't have any economic opportunity and, you know, there was very few prospects of me transcending my social status, yeah, I might need a little fucking nicotine booster during my day. It's just like, if I'm a single, I saw a single mother and she was smoking, it's disgusting. You know what? If I'm being kept up all night by two children and my partner and the father of his kids are not fucking helping me, and I'm also on receivership, and also the fact that I'm on receivership means if I wanted to go for a job, I'm already stigmatized because I can't, because I've already been on a dole. I've been on receivership in the first place and I'm trying to keep it up and keep my energy up and I can't afford any kind of nutrition or go to a gym. Yeah, I might need a fucking cigarette. And sometimes that little boost of energy and nicotine and distraction from the state of my life.
That's the word, distraction.
Yeah, that little distraction, that deflection, and me just, you know, just trying to, this small little path I might go in self-destruction is just a little break I need just to escape my body for like 2 fucking minutes. Like, how can someone understand that, right? If you have a hard day at work, you want to go and do a shot of tequila. So you understand why a woman might want to have a single mother might want to have a cigarette. In the same way that, like, when people are like, oh my God, like, people in the LGBT community, they call it, if you get HIV, they call it the gift. That's so twisted, blah, blah. Well, you know what? If there was an entire generation of people from our community that were plagued by the disease that kills us, and the world acts like they didn't really give a fuck until it affected them, and I'm still trying to survive the fact that I'm all considered inferior to other people just because of my sexual orientation, you know what? Maybe I'll just look at the irony of life and refer to it as a gift. So, fuck it. Yeah. So for me, I just think, yeah,
that is tough.
I never try to be judgmental, and yeah, I always try to preface any advice I give people by trying to see it from their situation as well, but always trying to aspire towards the most ideal state they can be in and be free of that situation. Like, and like I said, like, even on the subjects of work, like, I've spoken to like people where they've been like, oh Dana, I hate my job, and I'm like, ah, just,
oh my God, it happens, yeah, so much,
and
in our,
yeah, and I say, ah, just quit, and they're like, well, you can't just quit, Dana, blah 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 blah. But I say to them, I did, and it's not as easy as saying, oh, I did, so it's easy for you, because you may have a very different skill set to me. But what I always tell people, yeah, is that at the very least, just consider, like, you won't go in the office with no statues, you know, and none of these, that motherfucker from HR is not coming to your funeral.
Exactly. Listen, do you know what? When I was doing a 9-to-5, definitely I used to see people stressed, and then you'd hear someone dies in the council or wherever, and then you'd just see on the internal internet, like, their name and the you know, and a rose, and they worked so hard, and then
that's it.
Back to assessments.
And there you go. Assessments, back to assessments.
I was like, nah, my name's not coming up with no one rose. Are you mad?
This is it.
I want the whole place to shut down.
That's what I'm saying. They're not going to do a minute of silence for you, man. You know, next year. No. So, yeah.
That minute could be the start of an assessment for whatever job you're doing.
Exactly.
For the client.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's been brilliant to hear your answers to that question. I've been thinking about it a lot because people do it, right? People say, oh, I want your advice on this. It's like, oh, shit.
Do they really want your advice?
That's the question, right?
Do they really want your advice? Because sometimes you want to say, fix the hell up. Yeah. Don't ask for that damn same question again that you've been asking for the last 5 years.
Yeah, because taking advice can sometimes mean taking responsibility. And I think sometimes when people are given the power, or they understand now the power's within their hands to transcend their situation, it might be hard for them to do, maybe because of a learned behavior of not being able to respond very well to conflict or hostility, which is why anyone I love or I'm close to, that's why I say to them, even though it seems like I'm doing tough love or being aggressive, I say, what do you want? If you tell me exactly what you want, let's start working towards that.
Yeah. Great. Taking advice, great. Taking response. Love that.
Great conclusion to that answer there, guys. So over to Dane for the final question of today's show.
I just know this is going to be one question that I'm going to forget.
No, I promise. This is not going to be too verbose. I know I'm known for that, but, you know, ever since I got this dictionary app, it's just been a new vibe for me. But Judy, as I say, you're obviously known for your warmth. And like I said, you're the young auntie and you're the best friend next door. You are the lady at the salon. You are the friendly lady next. You're the lady... The other lady next to the other lady when she's getting, like, you know, the French tips or the acrylics done.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So
Judy's the dream person that you sit next to at a wedding.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Judy's, everyone's trying to be on Judy's table. Oh, so you're the go-to. So
I love that.
As well as that, and we've seen this materialize, Judy, because I've seen your Insta Live where you have helped people with their love lives and, you know, irrespective of, you know, age, race, sexual orientation. You're always trying to help people find
quarantine
the love.
Date night.
Quarantine date night. Quarantine check it out. If people don't know about it, check out Quarantine Date Night.
Last week was like a therapy session, I swear.
This
that.
Is it. People need it. And I feel like we had a discussion about it where you had said that, you know, sometimes you ran into some adversity because you think some of the criteria that people have is very unrealistic. And as I said, that's why I focus on what I have to offer rather than what I want. So I say that to say this, is that I think a lot of people really are too focused on what they think love should look like. When really it's not something you can necessarily see. It's a feeling. And I feel like sometimes people forget that. People have an idea that there's, that love has some kind of aesthetic. But my question is, because, like, you know, you try to help people and give them therapy in terms of finding, you know, a partner, finding some shared, I guess, love with somebody else. Your Judy love, what does a Judy love look like to you?
A Judy love? Love in itself or Judy's love?
In the eyes of Judy, what does love look like? Is how I should phrase the question.
Love. Oh, God, when I think about it, like, oh.
How do you define love, hey? That's a tough
one. How do you define love? Do you know what? I feel like it changes. It changes on, depending on where you are as a person. It changes on who's grown you as a person. I think that over the last couple of years, my idea and feeling of love has definitely changed and expanded. And it's even though it's expanded, it's more simple as well. I think for me, love is about finding someone, well, not finding someone, that person kind of comes to you, you know, you cross paths, and there's just something there. Like, even if you don't get on with them at first, but there's something there. And I feel like love is so simple. This is what I'm feeling. I'm feeling like it's quite simple. You get on. If there is a problem, you hash it out. Like, it's simple. It enhances you. It embraces you. You feel safe. I think those are the things that stands in my mind. It's simple, enhances your life. Or you as a person, you feel safe enough to be vulnerable, and it's fun. You know, I've had relationships and it's felt so heavy. Mm. Everything feels so heavy. And it's just like, even if they're like, I love it, it's just so heavy. Oh, let's do this, it's just so heavy. Like, if it's an argument, it's so heavy. Don't get me wrong, the more you check for someone, the more you're going to be passionate about something. But I think for me personally, like I said, it's simple. It enhances you, it's safe, and it's fun. And these are things that you need to think about.
So how, as I was saying, I was talking to Judy, and Judy was saying that, like, you know, she hears from people that are looking for partners where they're like, they have to be over 6'4" and own over this amount. And yeah, all this very strange superficial criteria, which is not in no way near tantamount to like a connection with somebody. So this is why it's like, that's not going to help you fall in love, which is why, like I said, going back to the first stuff, it's like, just because you look good doesn't mean your life is going to be patterned to be perfect.
Do you know what? And do you know what? When I was doing quarantine date nights, there was this guy that came on. And let me tell you something. I cannot get this comment out of my head. And maybe because I had a sick mum who passed away and I've got an elderly dad. But this guy came on and he was talking about love that he wants and, you know, what he wants to give to somebody. He was saying to them, when he came on, I think people was like, oh, they weren't sure about, you know, is he tall enough? Is it this? They were doing all of that. And then he was saying, one of the simple things he said was, I want to share my life with someone. I want to be able to sit down with them and say, babes, how are we going to care for our parents when they're older? I was like, mate, take my drawers. Take my drawers right now. I'll undo the bra for you,
there you
brother.
Go.
Don't worry. There you go. Because you see that there. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's the kind of love with, obviously you have conditions, but with no conditions, in the sense when someone can think about you and your extended, that they're going to say they want to be in that kind of love. That is real partnership. Like, how are we going to care for our parents when they're older? You know, it's those things. I don't think him being 6'4", him taking you to, you know, the most expensive restaurant and putting up an arrange really is going to matter. And because I've been through that period of caring for a parent and being so distraught, feeling so scared, so vulnerable, if someone had said that to me at that time or before that time, maybe I wouldn't have recognized it then. But now, when you go through things, you recognize, oh my gosh, that is love. Like, that is love. So I think that for me, it's those things. Mm.
It's powerful. Absolutely. It's powerful stuff, because people, you know, do get distracted. I think that's the way, you know, you talk about the kind of physicality element. I think, you know, it's got to be there, right? And you can love, you know, I can tell you that I love the way my wife smiles, and I'll never, ever, you know, stop loving that about her, no matter what.
Howard, she ends up just saying, when Judy's off this, I'm going to make fun of you incessantly. I just want you to know.
You've seen her little smiling face.
Tara has a wonderful smile.
She's a natural smiler. Absolutely. You know, Judy, you're a natural smiler. You're a natural smiley people. You can't, you know, you just got to love that, haven't you? But I think, you know, the obsession with that and the maintenance of that and the kind of, if you are in love with someone because of their physical being, then you've made, my mum always said it, you know, after, you know, my father passed away a number of years ago, and someone to do nothing with. Because the way she phrased
very
it,
well,
someone
very well,
to do
very
nothing
well put.
With, like that is a big part of what love is in a relationship sense. Anyway,
absolutely, that is so well put, Howard. That's really good.
When I think about love, I think about sitting there on a Sunday in your house clothes and your little bit of snacks, and you're just contented. It doesn't need anything else added on to that. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I've got a friend, and they've been in a relationship for years, and I was at their house a couple, like maybe about a year ago, actually. And the love between them, he cooked the meat, she cooked the sides and the gravy. And she must have did it exactly how he loves it. She knows it. And he just smacked her on her bum. But the content, like there was nothing else there. It was just like, oh, get, the way he smacked her, like a nice little tap. But you could just see the content in his face of like, only you know how to make that sauce the way that I like it. And to me, it was like that day, if I could, that's love, you know,
this little,
it's a chemistry, isn't it? It's a chemistry. I think a lot of the time, you know, you guys have known each other a while, you, Judy and Dane, right? Like, you know, I assume there's a great love between you, a differing love, but
definitely.
And it's a chemistry, right? Like as if you were both like Dane, or if you're both like Judy, maybe the love wouldn't be quite
absolutely.
There.
Exactly.
I think
finding that chemistry is everything.
I think the chemistry, it brings that energy. It brings that realness, I think. And as well, it's about being really real. I think sometimes we're so fixed on what is sold to us as romance and how relationships
absolutely.
Should be, that you could have it right in front of you and just we don't see it. I did a video one time talking about green flags. Like, everyone's going about red flag, that's a red flag. He didn't turn up, that's a red flag. Do you even know the green flags?
Yeah.
Can you even recognize a good man, a good woman, a good day? Can you even recognize it because you're so busy tick boxing, going by the red flags that you don't even know the green flags?
That's such a good point.
Because and that's what I have to say to some of my quarantine people. You're so there ticking a box. You're missing all the other bits that the person's saying and doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I didn't know what love was until I lost it.
Right.
And the first time I lost love, like, I took the disposition of most people do with institutionalized religion, is that I was speaking about love like people in religion speak about God, as if it was my possession, and that my love or my God is more important than anybody else's love or anybody else's God. And I say that because when I first had my heart broken as a man, I'm like, why this happened to me? I try and be a good person. I don't deserve this. In the same way that people will be like, God, why am I being forsaken? I'm a good person. Why do bad things happen to good people? And then I realized, it's like, you as a human being, when you describe what love is, have no right to talk about it as your possession. Your privilege as a living being is to get to experience love, which is why we say it's better to have loved and lost than to never have loved at all. Because may refer to as heartbreak, like, oh, my girlfriend doesn't want to be my girlfriend anymore. Well, you know what? When that happened to me, I can go to my parents and talk about it. Whereas, you know, my two friends and my guests here don't have that same privilege. So who the fuck am I, to talk about love as if it's my possession? You know, love is not something that any human being or any living being has a right to. We all have the privilege of being able to experience it. So, for example, as me and Howard spoke about last week, now Howard has something bigger than him himself he's apt to love, because now he has his son, Dylan. But now, at the same time, he's not able to relay that feeling to his own father, you know, because dad's not around. So, but as he was able to experience that love, in the same way that, you know, Judy, you have a career that we all love seeing you do well. We all love to see it. But at the end of the day, that's never going to be a substitute for a mother's love.
Yes, definitely.
That being said, while you can't articulate your love for your mother to her directly, to her physical ears, that feeling hasn't changed. Which means whether she's here or not, that love is still there, which means we are describing an infinite phenomenon or an infinite energy. Whether you are young, old, whether she's here or not, whether it's been 5, 10, 20, 100 years, your love for her is not going to change. And so for me, having to do that study of myself and not, you know, treat love like a possession, it's allowed me to be a better lover to everybody, which is why I say I don't really focus on what I want. It's who I am and what I have to offer other people. And by that same token, anyone who has truly experienced love, this is what I'm saying, the difference between, like, you know, knowing God and having religion is the same as knowing about romance and having your own possession and knowing what love is. Because if you know what love is, you could never, if you really know what love is, you could never look at another human being, irrespective of their gender, whether they're trans, whether they're gay, whether they're bi, you could never look at another human being and say that they are not, they should be denied love because of who they are or what they are.
Or their race. Yes.
If you know what love is, if another person says, I love that person and they're trans and I'm trans and I want to be with them, if you know what love is yourself, you would never deny that to another living creature. Because if you
did. And it's so true. When you think about people that are so bitter and people that hate and filled their hearts with hatred, they haven't had the love.
That's all it is. It's not about their hatred. It's about their lost love. In the same way that when people talk about heartbreak and it's like they've taken something from me, it's because you have taken the best part of yourself, which is supposed to be that part of ourself, which is holy and spiritual, and given that to somebody else. When they don't reciprocate, you feel like you've lost a part of yourself, which is why...
I need to get you on the quality.
Which is why people say self-love is so important. Because once you have that idea, and again, me saying that God is love, once you have this idea of love within yourself, and it's infinite and it's self-sustaining, which means there is no qualms about you giving it out to other people because you know you could always recreate it within yourself. Also...
And you know what? Something to add to that, Dane, as well, with the love about you saying acquire and give it back to yourself. If you love yourself enough that you love and trust yourself, that you can always say, okay, well, this is not enough, or this is
exactly
not what it's supposed to be.
Because you know who you are, and like I said, you're coming from a place of love. Because then you're setting a standard for yourself. You know how love feels to yourself. You enjoy the benevolent energy of knowing and loving a part of yourself. Once you can observe that in yourself, then you're able to project that onto other people. Because the only way, because then, like you said, then you can set a standard for yourself because you're like, I know how love feels. I know how it makes me feel. That is not what I am enjoying in this paradigm with another person. Then we don't have love.
Exactly.
That's what I think love is.
Powerful. It's beautiful. And I think there's one thing that's sure. It's lots of
speaking of love.
Here's a kind of love to show. Our listeners can't see him, but look, here's a little...
This is love.
Dylan,
is gorgeous.
My boy is just saying hello to Dane and Judy.
Hello, Dylan.
He hasn't got a lot to say, didn't he say much? No?
No, he is gorgeous.
He looks a lot like Tara. No offense, Howard.
Yeah,
he's like Tara. You don't mind, do you, sweetheart?
He looks like his.
The lip's just gone. Dylan, you'll be back on this podcast at some point, I'm sure. But that we're talking about love. That's this is one of the levels that it gets to, I think, isn't it, buddy?
Oh, I'm scared.
Judy is losing her mind with love right now. It's amazing.
It's been a brilliant episode today, full of love.
And you just topped it on the top with icing of Dylan. It just sealed it.
So Judy, again, thank you so much. We have nothing but love for you. Please tell our listeners where they can find you, where they can hear more of your stuff, and where they can see you spreading your love around the comedy world and the world at large.
Well, you can find me weekly, usually on Loose Women at 12:30. Depends. Just look on my Instagram, which is One Judy Love, Twitter One Judy Love, Facebook Judy Love, and that's JUDILOVE. And you can find me Mondays. I do Monday Motivational, Self Care Monday. I do some comedy videos sometimes through the week. I also do Quarantine Date Nights, which is every Thursday, 9 p.m. Till when it stops. I am off for the next 2 weeks. And I'm on BBC Radio London every Wednesday, 8 p.m. till 10. And every Sunday morning, I've got a Sunday show on BBC Radio London at 9 a.m. till 12. And then the other little bits that comes on. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, me and Dylan will be checking it out, won't we, Dylan?
Cool. As you can see, love is everywhere. Judy, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You've been amazing.
It's been amazing, Judy.
I feel that love is everywhere.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, YouTube. Take care.
Have a wonderful day.
Much love.
It's been brilliant to see you, Judy. Take care of yourself. And I'm sure, like all our listeners, we love you, Judy. Keep doing
it. Thank you. Thank you, Judy. All right, we'll talk.
For sure.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste. For more from Dane, go to danebaptiste.co.uk or follow him on Twitter at DaneBapTweets or Instagram at DaneSnapTeast. Our guest was Judy Love. You can follow Judy on Twitter and Instagram at OneJudyLove. The show is produced by me, Howard Cohen. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheHowardCohen. The show is mixed and mastered by Decode. You can follow Dee on Twitter and Instagram at OfficialDecode. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at DBQE Podcast. Thanks to Polly, Gelly and the Acast team for all their support. Thanks for listening, guys. And remember, question everything.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.